Son, Dalinar said after a moment's thought, do you know why I put you into the position that I did? You said it was because you needed someone you could trust not to be a spy for Sadeas. That's the rationale, Dalinar said, stepping up closer to the bars, only inches from Kaladin. But it's not the reason. I did it because it felt right. Kaladin frowned. I trust my hunches, Dalinar said. My gut said you were a man who could help change this kingdom. A man who could live through damnation itself in Sadeas's camp and still somehow inspire others was a man that I wanted under my command. His expression grew harder. I gave you a position no Dark Eyes has ever held in this army. I let you into conferences with the king. I listened when you spoke. Do not make me regret those decisions, soldier.
Heroes of presents Stormpod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 2, Words of Radiance.
Just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 61 and 62 of Words of Radiance. Make sure that you're all caught up on your reading and that you've picked the right episode. We wouldn't want you to be behind on anything or miss out on any of the fun. And if you have a second, check out the show notes. There's all kinds of stuff on there. There's the address to Twitter and Instagram. You can reach out to us on email if you want to send us a quick email. And if you want, why don't you check out the TeePublic store that we have? There's all kinds of goodies on there so you can proudly walk around with your StormPod merch. Your StormPod merch? Your StormPod merch. I think I'm going to leave this in. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and why will no one obey this podcast? This just wouldn't happen if you just obeyed Jack. What's up?
Just obey. Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Not bad. I think people should be obeying you more.
Obey. Actually, that's kind of, obey.
That's kind of fucking aggressive, actually.
It is. Yeah. Obey. Well, it reminds me of a great... I don't know what you call it. It's a cult film. It's called They Live. John Carpenter's.
Yeah, you've talked. We've talked about They Live.
It's
before.
A cult.
This is
and,
a second.
And they live.
This is the second time we've talked about the Roddy Piper.
Have we
film.
Talked about it on the pod?
Yeah, we have.
Oh, okay. Oh, we have.
Oh, yeah, already? Just okay. Like three okay, or four so, episodes ago.
So in They Live, they've got these great signs that say obey, like obey. These, you know, these like ominous. But this chapter that we're covering today, 61, is called Obedience.
Mm-hmm.
So we're dipping our feet a little further into part 4.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm inching. Whenever I get to part 4 of these books, so yeah. Part 4 of Way of Kings, it feels like I'm wading into cold water. And I'm going really slowly rather than jumping in.
Yeah.
And I'm regretting it because I'm just inching towards the...
You can feel you can feel the cold winds starting up, the high storms coming or something.
Yeah.
So, a year and a half ago gives us a good idea here that, you know, this is not very long before Shallan ends up with Yasna, right? Like, this isn't very long ago now.
A year and a half, that's right.
Yeah, when this started, it was 6 years ago, is one of the first flashbacks. So we're, like, getting pretty close here.
Shallan became the perfect daughter. Again, what a great beginning sentence.
Yeah.
And you know what? He doesn't have to make it into a paragraph. It's just one sentence.
Yeah.
Shallan became the perfect daughter. Well, what does it mean to be perfect? Well, to her, or perhaps maybe even to her father, more particularly, she kept quiet.
Right.
Spent most of her days in her room. He had proven, meaning her father, he had proven several times by this point that he would not touch her if she angered him. Now, that sounds, you know, it's not good.
No, it's not good.
You know?
Let's not forget how the last flashback chapter ended.
Yeah.
Where he beat that servant and he's like, this is what you made me do this. Right. You disobeyed me, I'm not going to beat my own daughter up, but I'll beat the fuck out of everybody else, and then that's on you. So
yeah, what a horrible thing to do to a child,
yeah,
or to anyone really. But the next line, instead, he would beat others in her name. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
The only time she allowed herself to drop the mask when she was when she was with her brothers. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
She's already like. This is before Vale.
Mm-hmm.
This is before leaving her household to
become Shallan the Scholar.
To become Shallan the Scholar, mm-hmm, as a deception.
Yeah.
To be able to steal the Faerberil.
Right. It's almost like she's being able to compartmentalize being a daughter and being a sister. When she's being a sister, she can let herself be a little more relaxed and fun.
Around the brothers, yeah, it says here that she would tell them stories, make jokes, poke fun at her father's visitors, and invented extravagant tales around by the hearth. That's really cool. But what I like about the beginning of that paragraph is the only time she allowed herself to drop the mask was when she was with her brothers. What that says to me is that the mask has been on her for quite a while.
Quite a long time.
It predates Carbranth.
Mm-hmm.
It predates Vale.
Yeah.
It predates where she's at now.
Yep.
You know, like this mask was put, this whole idea of Shallan the thief, Shallan the, I don't know what you call her, Shallan
the scholar,
Shallan the divided. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, we've talked about this kind of thing for a while. We've talked about it thematically with characters, you know, Dalinar, the diplomat, and the Blackthorn, and the Kaladin, the soldier, right, and the healer, and you know, Shallan, the thief, right, and the scholar. Yeah. So we kind of talked about these duality parts of these characters, right? And now we're realizing that Shallan isn't just a theme for her character. This is a survival instinct for her as a person, right? Remember the last chapter that we just had, she said, the image of herself, Shallan, as she should be, curled in a huddled on her bed, unable to weep for as long as since she had run out of tears. This girl, not a woman, a girl, flinched whenever spoken to. She expected everyone to shout at her. She could not laugh, for laughter had been squeezed from her by a childhood of darkness and pain.
And pain.
That
was
the real Shallan.
Right.
Yeah, so.
But even, I don't know, I'm going to just put forth that Shallan with the mask or many masks is maybe a more of an intrinsic part of her as well.
Right.
I think that it's brought on by out of necessity and survival. But again, I'm going to reserve judgments as a first time reader and just let's see how all this plays out.
Mm-hmm.
But, it makes me sad, obviously.
For sure.
As Shallan was involved, more and more with the Ardents and accountants, so I think that's interesting. She noted a shrewdness in the way her father stopped being bullied by other light eyes and started playing them against each other.
Right.
So I put a note there because she kind of is impressed by that.
Right.
By the fact that her father is deceiving.
Mm-hmm. And how he's trying to seize power and stuff.
Yeah, and she's. It actually says that she's impressed. He impressed her, but frightened her in how he seized for power.
Right.
Father's fortunes changed, however, when a new marble deposit was discovered, and she was thinking, well, this might have a positive impact on him.
Right.
But it doesn't.
It did not.
Saying here, these new resources would keep up with his promises and his bribes and his deals. Surely that would make him start laughing again. Surely that would drive the darkness from his eyes.
Yeah, and it says it did not.
Isn't that crazy?
You know what one of the takeaways from here is that there was a moment in her childhood, clearly, because she remembers her father being a good person.
But this was when the mother was
present,
right?
When mom was still around, yeah. So obviously this made a huge change on him. But it's nice to know that at some point he was a nice person. Do you know what I mean? At some point he was a nice guy.
Does she ever defend him in this next bit, doesn't she? So we get
before we move on, I just want to say father's fortune changed when a new marble deposit was discovered on his lands. We know the truth of what that is. That's not just, oh, look, we found a marble deposit. It's the using the soul caster to create new marble deposits,
new
on
resources.
His land. Yeah. Remember, he gets that soul caster, which ends up being broken, that she tries to switch for Yasna's.
Right.
This is from the Ghostbloods. So this is an already the beginning alliance of the Ghostbloods and House Devar to try to upend the Light Eye Society, trying to make him maybe a high prince.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really it's sad that it's had absolutely no effect.
Right.
And the darkness from his eyes, that's interesting. Surely it would drive the dark. Was the darkness present before? Was it always there?
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
She was too low. She is too low for you to marry, father would say. This he's speaking to Balat.
Right.
I won't have it, Balat. You will break off contact with this woman. Now the woman, I forget her name.
It's shit. It's a little later on here.
It's coming up. Yeah, it's coming up.
Yeah.
She belongs to a good family, Balat says. They were having lunch, and so Shallan was there. This is an interesting little bit of lore building here.
Aelita.
They're having lunch together. Aelita, that's it. Shallan is there during this lunch, but she's at her private table, so she's at the kids' table.
Right.
And there is a high table
right.
that they're at. Again, it's another example of like splitting people into mm-hmm. into positions
and yeah,
high
all that
high
stuff.
Tables and
yeah.
So she sat to the side. Balat was facing her father. Father, they're your vassals. Balat says to him, "You yourself have invited them to dine with us. My axe hounds dine at my feet. I do not allow my sons to court them.
Right.
House Tavanar is not nearly ambitious enough for us." Now, Sudhi Valam, that might be worth considering. The High Prince's daughter? You can't be serious. She's in her 50s. She is single.
Yeah.
He's serious.
Yeah, he is serious. So, a couple things here. Sudhi Valam is the High Prince's daughter, who is also yep. the half-sister of the man with the heterochromatic eyes that came by to warn Lynn Devar that the High Prince is kind of interested in what happened here with your wife dying. Remember the David Bowie
really?
Showed up and he was the bastard and he was the High Prince's bastard? Well, that's this Sudhi Valam is his half-sister.
Really?
Yeah. And I was curious.
I didn't get that. No.
So one of the curious things here is she's in her 50s. And we know that we, you know, in our society call hot older ladies cougars. What do you think they refer to hot older ladies on Roshar? Do you think they're like white spines? Yo, check out that white spine over there.
I think it's a gray spine.
It's a gray spine? Nice. Nice.
I don't know.
My wife has a shock of gray hair in the front of her head, and she's always like, I think I'm going to dye it. And I'm like, don't dye it. Leave it. I love it. It's great.
Start calling her Rogue.
Yeah, I should.
That's right.
That means I'm Gambit. I'll take that.
Well, I mean, he's very much serious. I mean, how old do you think Balat is? 20s?
Maybe.
How old is he?
24,
maybe? Is he 19? Is he a... I don't know. I'm not really clear. I know Helleran is supposed to be the oldest.
Yeah, so he's in his 20s. So maybe Balat's
so maybe
like 18
Helleran,
and Shallan's like 16 at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's crazy. Why don't you go marry this 50-year-old woman, please?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? There are probably worse things to do than to marry another high prince's daughter.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that's interesting. Because her husband died in a duel, Balat says. Anyway, the high prince would never approve it. His perception of us will change, father says. We are a wealthy family now with much influence. Yet still headed by a murderer, Balat snaps.
Oh, no.
And that's when Shallan thinks, oh, that's too far. Luish, another one of her brothers.
Luish is the manservant.
No, he's the new... Yeah, he's the new servant.
He's the one who has the Ghostbloods tattoo
the steward.
On him. Yeah, he's the steward.
Right.
So here is another confirmation that we've entered the era of the Devar family being groomed
connected
by the Ghostbloods.
To the Ghost...
Yeah.
Right. So Lewis laces his fingers in front of him. The new house steward had a face like a well-worn glove. I really like that. Leathery and wrinkled. Father, Father stands up. This new anger of his, the cold anger, terrified Shallan. And he says, your new Axhound pups. Terrible that they caught a sickness during the latest high storm. Tragic. It is unfortunate they need to be put down. And he gestures to one of the guards to go and take care of this matter. So because Balot said, you know, that our house is headed by a murderer.
Yep.
He stands up and orders Luesh to take care of his pups to
Or
to
he
put
says
them down.
It to one of the new guards. A man Shallan
Or was it one of the new guards?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
I think this ends up being another... the same guy that they mentioned later, Rin or whatever.
Oh, okay. Stepped outside, pulling his sword from his sheath. Shallan grew very cold. Luesh grew concerned, placed a hand on Father's arm. You bastard, says Balot. You'll what, Balot? Come on, say it. Will you challenge me? Don't think I wouldn't kill you if you did. Wickham may be a pathetic wreck, but he will serve just as well as you for what this house needs. Helleran is back, Balot says. His father froze. I saw him 2 days ago, Balot says. He sent for me, and I rode out to meet him in the city. Helleran, that name is not to be spoken in this house. The father says, I mean it. Non-Balot, never.
Yeah, we already know how he feels about his oldest son, so.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
I think, Helleran made it very clear. And he wasn't going to tolerate anything anymore, so he
I really like this
left.
Next little two lines here.
Shallan counted 10 beats of her thumping heart before Balot broke the stare with his father and looked away. Hmm. I know. I was wondering whether or not she was using a power.
Well, 10 heartbeats. What's 10 heartbeats?
Well.
It's how long it takes to summon your shard blade.
Right.
And the fact that she's counting these 10 heartbeats, it's just very thematic. It almost feels like...
Was she debating?
Maybe. Like, it feels a little bit like Shallan is...
About to summon?
Or do something. We know that she has a shard blade. We just don't know if she has it right now. Does that make sense?
Right.
We don't know the history of all that. So we don't really know if she has possession of it right now. But the fact that they mentioned 10 beats of her thumping heart again, it makes it's like foreshadowing maybe that something could happen, right? Like, I don't know.
Right.
It's just really cool. Or maybe it's like a false foreshadowing.
Well, I think it would make more sense if she was counting. Shallan counted. Yeah, so she's counting. I think it means that she's in possession already. And
maybe
was debating in that moment that this could escalate.
It's possible.
Escalate. If it escalated to the point where her father was going to strike down Balot, she may have intervened.
Right. Yeah, it's weird.
So father sits down. Balot stalks out of the room. Eventually, father stands up and leaves, as well as Luesh, leaving Shallan alone with the servants. But then she got up and went after Balot. And of course, he went to the kennels. Where his pups are, his Axhound pups. The guard that had been sent had done the work swiftly.
Mm-hmm.
Balot's new pod of pups lay dead in a pool of violet blood on the stone floor. That's terrible.
Yeah.
It's just awful. So cruel.
Mm-hmm.
She had encouraged him to breed these. So it's kind of weird, you know, like her trying to get him to change and it kind of brings on more pain onto the character, right?
It does.
It's like, because she is trying to change him, then those good things being introduced to his life can be used by others
to hurt
to
them.
Cause more pain. Yeah.
So she encouraged this relationship with Aelita. She encouraged the Axhound pup like breeding, and now both those things are being taken away by his father.
He'd been making progress with his demons. This is Balot over the years. He rarely hurt anything larger than a Kremling. So that was a real problem for his behavior. And Shallan was really trying to help him with that.
Yeah.
And was doing great. Pain spren cluttered around him. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Father's guards, Balat said, it's like they were waiting for a chance to do something like this. I don't like the new group he has, that Levrin with the angry eyes and Rin. That one frightens me. So I had sent you a text earlier that I thought we had that name, but is it Rin? I'm talking about the islands?
You're talking about Risen, R-Y-S-N.
Risen.
She's
right.
The apprentice of Vistam Herbapsk, the merchants.
So we haven't had Rin,
no,
yet.
This is a okay. New, these are like new guards that have been inputted probably by the Ghostbloods. Because they're saying, whatever happened to Ten and Beale, these old guards that they liked.
Right.
Soldiers you could joke with, almost friends. And now they're gone, and in their stead are these hard men that probably listen to Luesh.
Right.
You know? So, things are changing. Things are a-changing.
Balat, did you really see Helorin? Shallan asks him. Yes, he said I wasn't to tell anyone, though. He warned me that this time when he left, he might not be coming back for a long time. He told me to watch over the family. But I can't be him, Shallan. You don't need to be. Well, he's brave. He's strong. Yes, but he abandoned us. Balat says maybe he was right. Maybe that's the only way, Shallan.
Mm-hmm.
To leave our house? What of it? Balat says. You spend every day locked away, brought out only for father to display. Yushu's gone back to gambling, and you know he has, even if he's smarter about it. And Wickham talks about becoming an ardent, but I don't know if father will ever let him go. He's insurance. It was a good argument, says Shallan, or thinks Shallan. Where would we go, she asks. We have nothing. Yes, but we have nothing here, Balat says. I'm not going to give up on Ailida, Shallan. She's the only beautiful thing that has happened in my life. If she and I have to go live in Vednar as Tenth Dawn, with me working as a house guard or something like that, we'll do it. Doesn't that seem a better life than this? He gestures toward the dead Axehound pups. Mm-hmm. Ugh, this was really good dialogue and very emotional, very raw.
Yeah.
I don't love it, but I love it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we get to feel for Balat. We get to know him a little bit more. You know, like he actually cares about this Ailida. It's funny because he's like, we should leave. And she's like, I don't know. And then now, in our present time, she's like, I should try to convince my brothers to leave.
Right.
Right? So things have kind of changed in this year and a half. So, yeah,
that's
it's interesting.
Right. Yeah. Well, I can't believe that she still comes to his defense with her father, but it's coming up here in the conversation. So, okay. So she says, perhaps. And then he asks her, would you go with me if I took Ailida and left? You could be a scribe. You could earn your way. Be free of father. And she says, no, I need to stay. But why? Something has a hold of father, something awful. If we all leave, we give it to him. Someone has to help him. So do you think that Shallan's already figured that out?
Figured what out?
What's happening to her father? Because she says something has a hold of him. Well, how does she know?
Oh, you're meaning does
something,
she...
Something awful. How do you know?
Do you think you're thinking that she's thinking about the Ghostbloods right now and the organization that he's gotten himself into?
No, I'm thinking about his changes in temperament.
Mm-hmm.
The way he treats
she's saying something's got a hold of him, but like something kind of amorphous.
Even,
you know what I mean? Like this cold anger,
maybe.
this demeanor, something has a hold of him. And if we leave him, then he doesn't have anybody else. Do you know what I mean?
Does her father have a shard blade right now?
I don't think so.
Is he a shard bearer?
No, he's not. If he was a shard bearer, his standing amongst the other light eyes in Vaidenar wouldn't have been so low.
Right.
He would instantly be of higher dawn.
Of higher, yeah.
Yeah, so he...
Well, then why would she count the 10 heartbeat? Like, my little theory about that if she's counting, she's potentially going to summon. If she's going to summon, she has the blade. If she has the blade, she knows what it kind of does or should at least summon. And if she knows that, then that's a great threat to bear down on her father.
Right.
So what I'm getting at is, if whatever she thinks is so bad that it could warrant summoning a shard blade, what does she know? We also know that she's had, at this point, her mother is gone, which was a traumatic event.
Right.
We don't know the details of it
point. The only thing we do know is that her father carried her out of that room with two corpses on the ground. One with the eyes burned out and one bloodied.
Right.
Right.
So,
you know,
she could have memories. She could have memories and that whole experience, which is what Pattern, I think, is trying to bring out of her.
Right. Right.
And so Pattern, so that experience, she could know that, there's something really wrong with him and is acting on that. That's why she can't go.
Right.
Now, it remains to be seen whether or not she really knows or if she's just coming to understand. If it's all just feelings up until the point where Pattern appears.
Right. We're not really, really sure timeline-wise when things happen. We know that in the future, or in the present, I guess in the past of the present, she kills Tin with a shard blade that she's able to summon. We're not sure when she gets that shard blade. We don't know if she has it here a year and a half in the past. We don't know. We also don't know whether or not Pattern's already around and hanging out right now. We don't know.
He could just be watching her.
Right.
Yeah, he could just be.
He could. They could start interacting after this year and a half, before she goes to Yasna. But even when she goes to Yasna, she doesn't realize. She's terrified of the cryptics when she sees them. So there's a lot that's not. That Shallan is not admitting to herself. Even when we read these flashbacks, she is not a reliable narrator right now. She is not. She cannot be relied upon to tell us the truth. Even Mr. Sanderson, I think, cannot be relied upon to be telling us anything truthful in these flashbacks because Shallan herself.
Are you saying Mr. Sanderson is truthless at this point?
I'm saying that Mr. Sanderson likes to troll us, as example from the last few releases of announcements that he's been doing. And it's than in these chapters, these flashback chapters, when things are a little murky and we're not really sure what's happening.
Perhaps. So she says someone has to help him. But why do you defend him so? You know what he did. He didn't do it. Right there, Sean. That is a...
She's saying he did not kill Mom.
He did not kill Mom. You can't remember, Balat says. You've told me over and over that your mind blanks. You saw him kill her. But you don't want to admit that you witnessed it. Storm Shallan, you're as broken as Wickham and Jushu. As I am sometimes. She shook off her numbness.
Yeah.
There's the numb back again. That's actually prevalent in the next chapter too. It doesn't matter, she says. If you go, are you going to take Wickham and Jushu with you? I couldn't afford to, Balat says. Jushu in particular. We'd have to live lean and I couldn't trust that he would, you know. But if you came, it might be easier for one of us to find work. You're better at writing and art than Aelita. No, Balat, I can't. Particularly if Jushu and Wickham remain here. Oh, I see. Well, maybe there's another way out. I'll think. He leaves and she enters the manor. I like that she just won't abandon her brothers.
Yeah.
She won't abandon her family.
Yeah, she's really, really committed
to them. Like, Helleran left.
Yeah.
You know, and she didn't go after him. She's so young.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, he left, and which is why she brings it up to Balat earlier.
Yeah. He left us.
He's the one who abandoned
us. Yeah.
So I'm not chasing him down. But if you think about leaving, then we all go, or this is not a good plan.
Right.
So
there's a little metaphor here that I really like. She says she entered the manor, but couldn't help feeling that she was trying to hold together a carpet as dozens of people pulled out the threads from the sides.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's trying to keep everything together, but there are so many different factors that are unspooling everything, you know, and she just can't keep up. And I like it. I like that metaphor a lot.
What a tale we weave.
Especially because of all the, you know, all the carpet meta things that have happened, right? Carpet, the blood stained carpet. Yeah, right? Yeah. The carpet inside of Amram's tent. There's the nice fluffy white carpet inside of her room at Sabariel's. And then when she goes to the Ghost Blood's hideout, there's a red carpet on the floor. There's a lot of carpet themes going on. Not as really cool as like a wind theme or anything, but like I like to point out a carpet theme every once in a while.
There's the carpet in the chamber the chamber of secrets, is it?
No, it's a carpet in the chamber of secrets. I think it's a basilisk that was in there.
I think it's a basilisk.
Not
I'm
a
thinking
carpet.
About something else. No, what's the one in Aladdin? It's in the
the
Cave of Wonders. That's the Cave of Wonders. Sorry. I always get my Cave of Wonders mixed up with my Chamber of Secrets.
Hey, imagine if it was Harry Potter and the Carpet of Secrets, it was just a carpet they had to fight at the end.
Harry Potter and the Cave of Wonders. Huh?
What?
Okay. She enters the manor, right? She feels as if the dozens of people are pulling apart the threads of this carpet.
Mm-hmm.
We have to just weather this, she says. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Me too.
We have to weather this.
Yeah.
Just like everything else here.
Yeah. Just like everything else.
Stop provoking Father. Let him relax. Then he'll come back. Interesting that he'll come back, like, as if he's gone.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I'm getting at. Like, I don't know that her father is her father. I'll say it like that.
I think the people change, and she's hoping that he can change again.
No. Maybe. She passes Father's door. She's going back. It was opened up a crack, and she could hear him inside, and he says, "Find him in Valath. Nanbalat claims to have met him in the city, and that is what he must have meant. It will be done, Bright Lord." That voice was Rin, the captain of Father's new guards. Shallan backed up, peeking into the room. Father's strongbox shone behind the picture on the back wall, bright light bursting through the canvas. To her, it was almost blinding, although for the men in the room, they didn't seem to be able to see it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So only she can see that. This is not the first time that we've seen Shallan see this glowing inside the strongbox. This is the first time she's told us, though, that there are other people in the room while it's shining, and they can't see the shining. The shining.
The shining.
Mm.
Like the soul in the suitcase in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, kind of. Which is just a light bulb.
It's just a light bulb, yeah. Yeah, interesting that. Of course, I have theories about that. You know, I think it could be someone
mm-hmm.
in the strongbox.
Right.
Rin bows before the father and heads hand on the sword. "Bring me his head, Rin." And he's talking about Helorin.
Yeah, he is.
"Bring me his head. I want to see it with my own eyes. He is the one who could ruin all of this. Surprise him. Kill him before he can summon his shard blade. That weapon will be yours in payment so long as you serve House D'Var." Okay, this is crazy. No father is going to talk like that about their son. Like, it just doesn't add up. Like, the anger, the willingness to do whatever it takes to accomplish the goal, that seems unlike the father that she describes of her younger years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't get a lot of that yet, but
we know that he's hated Helorin for a long time. He's hated his own mm-hmm. son. His son is a challenge to his own power. He even says,
mm-hmm.
you know, he says here, he's the one who could ruin all of this. You know, there's a couple of things here I want to break apart. One, it's really funny because we learn, according to Amram, that Helorin was sent by the Ghostbloods, by Thaidakar and the Ghostbloods.
And, that's what he suspects.
Right.
Yeah.
And we know for sure that Luesh and these men also work for the Ghostbloods.
Are also associated.
So like they're, you know, Lin's like, "Go kill that guy." And then they're like, "Oh, he works for us." You know what I mean? Like,
so, well, it could be that because of House D'Var's connections with the Ghostbloods, that it's assumed that all from House D'Var are connected to the Ghostbloods.
Maybe.
Meaning that was an assumption that Amram made about Helleran.
Mm-hmm.
Which, do we know that Helleran was associated?
We don't know. We don't know whether or not he was associated with them. All we know is that Amram thought so, right?
Right.
Right. The other thing here that I have to say before we leave this chapter or this part is, I don't think Lindavar really knows how this stuff works. Okay, he's like, kill him before he can summon his shard blade. That weapon will be yours in payment, so long as you serve House D'Var. So when you kill a shard bearer, you get their blade or their shards, armor. Whichever piece they have, it's yours now by right.
Right.
And no middling light eyes can tell you whether or not it belongs to you or not. So if Rin goes and kills Helleran and takes his shard blade,
they can't take it away.
Lin can't tell him what to do with that. It now belongs to him. In fact, Rin would probably be higher status than Lindavar is just by being a shard bearer.
So he's changing the game. He's adding
on. He's trying to, but I don't think he realizes how the game is even played. Yeah.
It's called homebrew.
It is.
Shallan stumbles back from the door. Father could look up and see her. Helleran. Father had just ordered Helleran's assassination. I have to do something. I have to warn him, but how? Then she hears a feminine voice within. How dare you? Stunned silence followed. Malise, her stepmother, stood in the doorway between the bedroom and the sitting room. Your own son, Malise says. Have you no morals left? Have you no compassion? He is no longer my son, father growls. Again, growls like an animal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it could just be that he's an ambitious, blind with the new greedy ambition, and that's it. It could be that, or it could be something else.
Could be.
Wasn't Wit also of the opinion that Helleran was wrong about everything else? That was something too, right?
Yeah, he said, the line was, your brother thinks that your father is tearing this family apart, and he was right about that, but he was wrong about everything else.
Right. I believed your story about the woman before me, Malise says. I've supported you. I've lived with this cloud over the house. Now I hear this. It's one thing to beat the servants, but to kill your own son? Father whispered something to Rin. And Shallan jumped and barely got down the hallway to a room before that man slipped out of the room and closed the door with a click. Shallan shut herself in her own room as the shouting started. This is a violent and angry back and forth between Malise and her father. Her father stormed out into the hallway. Why will nobody in this house obey? He shouted, thumping down the stairs. This wouldn't happen if you all just obeyed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the title, Obedience. I haven't thought of a different title for chapters in a while. I just I haven't got one. This is perfect.
Yeah.
What do you think? Highlight here for me? I don't know.
Yeah, what's your highlight?
I think it's going to be that she's convinced that he didn't do it.
Right.
You know? That was a shock for me. That was a shock. I mean, I love the fact that she's not willing to do anything without all of her family together. Mm-hmm. Like, if Balat leaves, she'll stay just to be with Wickham and Jushu, I guess.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
She won't leave them. She won't leave her family.
Yeah, she won't and even leave him. Even if the other two boys leave with Balat, she won't leave him. She won't leave her dad.
And she was willing to become something else and steal a Fabriel to save her family's name, her family.
Hmm?
Like, she was willing to become something else, to become Shallan the Scholar.
Oh, right, right. Eventually, yeah.
She was willing to do that to save her family's name, to save her brothers.
To protect her brothers, yeah.
Right.
My highlight
So what's your highlight?
Is got to be that Lindavar thinks he can tell a shard bearer what to do after they become a shard bearer. so arrogant, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he clearly, he thinks he's this big lord who's going to be, you know, changing the game, and he doesn't even know what the fuck he's talking about.
Right. So. Right. So you, but you can only keep that shard.
Only if you serve me can you keep that shard blade. Yeah, we'll see,
fucker. If you don't, it comes to me.
Yeah, we'll see what you do whenever I have a shard blade. When I literally have a giant sword that I can do whatever I want with.
Great chapter. Loved it. Again, not enough about this mystery revolving Lynn and the murder of Shallan's mother. I wonder if we'll get it in this book. I hope so. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Chapter 62 is The One Who Killed Promises. That one who killed promises. This is, I suspect, a little like a skunk naming itself for its stench. That's how the chapter, there's a little sort of a little epithet before the chapter begins.
Yeah, it's the continuation like of these epigraphs. And we don't really, it's not giving us too much more new information. At least when we were getting these like excerpts from the Words of Radiance book, we were learning something new about these old Knight's Order, like Radiant Orders and stuff. But this stuff isn't really giving us much new information. So
nothing new. It's building on what I've feared for a long time.
Which is?
Well, which is Kaladin's undoing. Kaladin's. You know,
no, I mean, I'm just talking about the epigraph at the top.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the epigraph. That these little epigraphs so far, they haven't really given us much new information. It's just this like ongoing letter, I think. And giving us anything new. Unlike the Words of Radiance excerpts, which were really informative.
I was just speaking about the chapter itself.
Yeah,
sorry,
for sure. You're totally right.
Because you're right. There's nothing to really infer there. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what to say about that. This is, I suspect, a little like a skunk naming itself after itself for its stench.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that quite yet. I didn't.
This will all be clear later when we do that special episode where Buzzkill will read us all of them together and we can parse them out and talk about them.
So life continues on in Kaladin's cell. He finds himself wishing that he was back in the slave wagon because at least he'd have the ability to see the scenery. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like he values being outside, values the landscape, values the wind, values the sun. You know, it's the state of being that I love imagining him in is bounding around the world.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like that's...
It's kind of what he was meant to do.
The guards have taken away the spheres at night, abandoning him to blackness. And in the dark, he found himself imagining that he was someplace deep with miles of stone above him and no way out, no rescue. He could not conceive a worse death. Better to be gutted on the battlefield, looking up at the open sky as your life leaked away.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's nice.
I mean, I like the fact that he values it that much, like, you know, to die in a dark place, but to die looking up at something beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. And we also learned that he could never be a dwarf who lives, you know, miles underground. He could never do it.
No, I don't think he could be a D&D. Yeah, like...
No, he couldn't do that.
A Battlehammer clan.
Nope.
No, he's I don't think he can...
He couldn't do it. Even for the strongest mead, he wouldn't be able to go.
No, he couldn't do it. Light awoke him, and the servant was carrying his breakfast, changing his chamber pot. She scurries away. It says here he was frightened. Sorry, she scurried away. He frightened her. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Is he gaining a reputation?
Maybe. I mean, he's a prisoner and she's a maid, so, you know.
Well, does she scurry away at all of them? Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe.
Kaladin sat up and regarded his meal. It was flatbread stuffed with bean paste.
Mmm. Sounds
good. He stood with, otherwise known as Taco Bell. He stood waving away some strange spren, like taut wires crossing before him, and then forced himself to do a set of push-ups. So I sent that to you earlier in the text because I thought that we got those coupling of words previously in some of the interludes or something like that.
Taut wires, eh?
Yeah. And so I don't have a Kindle version, so I couldn't really just go search around it and search the text for it. But I was wondering if we'd had that description, because it doesn't name the Spren right here.
It does not. And to be honest, I don't have that in the info dump either.
Okay. So I don't know what Spren it is, but
and when this episode comes out, we will probably have people on Reddit and on the Discord to tell us what it was. So,
oh yeah,
we can crowdsource the answer this time.
Okay, let's crowdsurf.
Crowdsurf the answer.
Yeah, was this what happened to Moash's grandparents, waiting for a trial until they died in prison? Helps us understand Moash's position, and it also for this chapter, because he thinks about Moash.
Yeah.
When dealing with Dalinar,
mm-hmm.
and so his conclusions.
And it's also a little bit of foreshadowing for the conversation about to come, right?
Right. He hears Syl humming nearby. Syl, he asks, there was a cryptic at the fight, her voice said softly. Yeah, you mentioned those before, didn't you? A type of Spren? A revolting type, but not evil, I don't think. I was going to follow it as it fled, but you needed me. When I went back to look, it had hidden from me. So this is pattern, correct?
Right.
Am I correct on that assumption?
Yeah.
During the battle? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean? Kaladin asks. Well, cryptics like to plan. Yes, I remember. They debate and watch and never do anything, but what? Kaladin asks. Well, they're looking for someone. I've seen the signs. Soon you might not be alone, Kaladin. That's really neat.
It's really cool.
I'm hoping it means Shallan, like with her coming into her abilities and powers. Like, I'm hoping that's what it means, but
yeah.
Who knows? I don't know.
This next part is my favorite part of the chapter. This is my highlight.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Looking for someone to choose like him as a surge binder. What kind of Knight Radiant had been made by a group of Spren Syl so obviously detested? It didn't seem like someone he'd want to get to know. And then he thinks, oh, storms, Kaladin thought, sitting back down. If they choose Adolin? Isn't that hilarious?
So yeah, my favorite part here is like, you know, what kind of Knight Radiant had been made by a group of Spren that Syl so obviously detested? It didn't seem like someone I would want to get to know. And it's literally Shallan. Right. And this is like some kind of like weird dig at Shallan without even really knowing it. They already insult each other all the time. And this is like an unknown insult. Right?
Yeah.
This is great.
What's funny is that he's not only insulting what in his thoughts Shallan, but in the next breath, he's like, oh, I hope it's not Adolin. I hope it's not that fashion guy.
Yeah.
Syl's revelation was oddly comforting, though, because not being alone with his powers, even if it did turn out to be Adolin, made him feel better and drove away some small measure of his gloom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have someone to go through all this with.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm really wanting this band to get together,
Like, it doesn't matter if you don't know how to play. We'll learn how to play. Listen, the Ramones didn't know how to fucking play when they made the band. And look, they literally spawned thousands of bands after they play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they sure did.
Yeah.
He's thinking here about Wit. The storm catches everyone eventually. Thinking about Fleet.
About Fleet, yeah.
Dalinar Colan steps into the room. So this is a big deal. Kaladin's immediate reaction? To stand up and salute, hand to breast, and then he thinks, oh, I'm such an idiot, as soon as he did it. He stood behind bars and was saluting the man who put him there.
Right.
But he's honorable.
Mm-hmm.
At ease, Dalinar says. He looks like the generals from the stories. I like that line that Kaladin's thinking.
Yeah, I like that too. The only thing
and
about
they go
that
on
is
to
that,
describe him.
No, it's just the only thing about that is that Kaladin has been fooled by the stories before. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But we know that Dalinar is a good man.
So far. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Blackthorn's a complete mystery.
Right.
And his blackout, you know, his memory about his wife, all of that.
It's all to come, right? Like some stuff we don't know about yet that hopefully we will learn.
He didn't wear a uniform. The uniform wore him.
That's awesome.
That says it all about Dalinar. Dalinar Colan represented an ideal that Kaladin had long since decided was a mere fancy. Mm-hmm. How are your accommodations? Dalinar asks. Sir, I'm in a storming prison. A smile cracks across Dalinar's face. So I see. Calm yourself, soldier. If I'd ordered you to guard a room for a week, would you have done it? Yes. And consider this your duty. Guard this room. I really like that.
Yeah.
Because it changes the perspective
right.
on your imprisonment. He's right. getting him to think about it differently.
Because it's true. If Dalinar had told him, guard this room for a week, he would have done it.
Right.
Yeah. I like it too. It's awesome.
It's really awesome. It might be my highlight. If it weren't for the crack about Adeline, he's like, oh no, it's not Adeline, is it? Is he going to be the one that's going to join me with powers and all this stuff? Really? That guy?
Yeah. Yeah, I like
and
that
also Shallan, like, who's this person that's, you know, like, who's this? And then he finds out, oh, it's the boot stealing gal. Oh my God. Like, really?
Yeah.
You'd have done it. Yes. Then reconsider this your duty and guard this room. I'll make sure nobody unauthorized runs off with the chamber pot, sir.
Yeah.
I like that response. Yeah, it's funny. Elikar's coming around, speaking about the king. This is Dalinar speaking. He's finished cooling off and now only worries that releasing you too quickly will make him look weak. I'll need you to stay here a few more days. Then we'll draft a formal pardon for your crime and have you reinstated. I don't see that I have any choice, sir. This is hard for you. Kaladin nods with regards to being imprisoned. Yeah, of course it's hard. But you're well cared for, as are your men. Two of your bridgemen guard the way into the building at all times. There's nothing to worry about, soldier. If it's your reputation with me... Sir, Kaladin interrupts. I guess I'm just not convinced that the king will ever let me go. He has a history of letting inconvenient people rot in dungeons until they die.
Ooh. So he brings it up, finally.
Again, he says too much.
Yeah, I don't think it's like too much. I think it's just enough, right?
Well,
this is a major worry that he has.
But he can't. Like, he's already tried to speak openly with Dalinar, and it's failed.
Mm-hmm.
He told him about Amaram, and he was shut down and largely, in many ways, dismissed about it.
Mm-hmm. As progressive as Dalinar is, he still is a rigid, light-eyed soldier who is set in his ways, right? So
if I were Kaladin, I would have let that strategy go with trying to be open with him.
Well, it works in this case because he gets information really needs.
He gets the confirmation. No. Not confirm. He gets the acknowledgement from Dalinar that this event actually happened.
Right.
Right? You speak of the silversmiths back in Kolinar, Dalinar says. And Kaladin, like, seems a bit shocked here.
Yeah.
So he did know. How did you know about that incident? Dalinar asks. From one of my men. He knew the imprisoned people. I had hoped we could escape those rumors. I'll comment after this paragraph, but of course, rumors grow like lichen, crusted on and impossible to completely scrub free. What happened with those people was a mistake, soldier. I'll admit that freely. The same won't happen to you. So, he admits that it happened, but he does say, I had hoped that these rumors didn't escape. And then he goes on to say that they can become impossible to scrub free.
Right.
Like as if one should do that. One should control information or control, you know what I mean? Like it reeks of a little like, well, it's lack of transparency. It's lack of admitting that this awful thing happened.
Right.
Like it doesn't do anyone any good to just tuck it under the rug.
No. But I mean, important people. People in power, right?
Right. Yeah, I know. But he's supposed to be different.
He's supposed to be. And he did try to do some stuff about it, but he eventually gets overruled, right? By his own brother. So
are the rumors about them true then? I would really rather not speak of the Roshon affair.
Dun, dun, dun.
Ah, Roshon, Kaladin thinks.
Yeah. It all comes full circle, bro.
This is crazy. This little flashback here, just in the text, Kaladin remembers the screams, the blood on the floor of the during his father's surgery. A dying boy.
That's Rillier, Roshon's son.
Right. A day in the rain, a day when one man tried to steal away Kaladin's light, and he eventually succeeded.
Right.
Roshon, Kaladin whispers. Yes, he was a minor, Light Eyes. Sir, it's important that I know of this, for my own peace of mind. What do you think about that?
Well, he needs to know. About... Now that he hears the name Roshon, he needs to know.
He needs to know.
Yeah.
Roshon had infected Hearthstone like rot spren on an unclean wound.
Yeah.
He was the reason that Tien had gone to war. He was the reason that Kaladin had followed. Yeah, I suppose I owe you this, Dalinar says, but it's not to be spread around. Roshon was a pretty... Well, sorry, pretty. He was a petty man who gained Elokar's ear. Elokar was crowned prince then and commanded to rule over Kolinar and watch the kingdom, while his father organized our first camps here in the Shattered Plains. I was away at the time.
Hmm.
So where was Dalinar?
Yeah, he's not saying.
In was he in a state?
We know that he was drunk. At the assassination, Zeth. I don't know that means that he was drunk, but there's definitely something to this here. I was ellipses away at the time.
Away at
there's
the time.
Something
yeah.
that Dalinar's I know not there telling is. Us for sure.
Right. Anyway, do not blame Elokar. He was taking the advice of someone he trusted. Roshon, however, sought his own interests ahead of those of the throne. He owned several silversmith shops. Well, the details are not important. Suffice it to say that Roshon led the prince to make some errors. I cleared it up when I returned.
Mm-hmm.
You saw this Roshon punished? Kaladin asks, feeling numb.
Mm-hmm.
He was exiled, Dalinar said. Elokar moved the man to a place where he couldn't do any more harm.
Isn't that funny?
And that could not be further from the truth.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
He did exactly that.
Kaladin almost laughed. I almost kind of wish he did laugh.
You have something to say? Dalinar says. You don't want to know what I think, sir. Perhaps I don't. I probably need to hear it anyway. Dalinar was a good man, blinded, but a good man. Well, sir, says Kaladin, I find it troubling that a man like Roshon could be responsible for the deaths of innocent people and yet escape prison.
Mm-hmm.
It was complicated, soldier. Roshon was one of the High Prince Sadius's sworn liegemen. Cousin to important men whose support we needed. I originally argued that Roshon should be stripped of station and made a tenor, forced to live in life of squalor. But this would have alienated allies and could have undermined the kingdom. Elokar argued for leniency toward Roshon and his father agreed via Spanreed. I relented, figuring that mercy was not an attribute I should discourage in Elokar. So very well put. Mm-hmm. That paragraph by Dalinar.
Yeah.
It's he's covering a lot of bases there in defending
right the decision
how Light Eyes protect Light Eyes.
Right. And he's like, you know, we've got these alliances. My brother has literally just built this empire through warfare right. and diplomacy. And, you know, if we do this, this could make a rift in the alliances that we already have. And like, I like this part about mercy and this is, and, figuring that mercy was not an attribute I would discourage in Elokar.
Right.
Elokar's trying to be merciful towards Roshon.
Right. So let's encourage that.
Right. But
rather
Roshon
than
wasn't
have...
deserving of it.
No.
No, he wasn't.
No. But also, the punishment or the consequence has to meet the crime, too.
Like, right.
You don't have to just elevate to a tyrant king.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have given Roshon a proper punishment for what
right.
he had done.
Yeah, instead of just
which is,
sicking him on
which
Hearthstone.
Is what, right. Of course not, Kaladin says, though it seems this is great from Kaladin. though it seems that such mercy often ends up serving the cousins of powerful light eyes and rarely someone lowly. It's a great counterpoint.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
It's all just set up to defend them. And it kind of speaks to recent events, actually.
Yeah.
Just because you're someone special, you're a light eyes, you're in a special group. Well, why should you be treated differently when you step out of line?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Soldier Dalinar asks, do you think I've been unfair towards you or your men? You? No, sir. But this isn't about you. That's not entirely truthful response from Kaladin, by the way.
Why?
Well, because Dalinar is asking him, do you think I've treated you unfair?
Right.
Yeah, I do. That's actually how Kaladin feels. Yeah, I'm in prison. This is, you should believe me about Amaram.
Right.
You should have investigated that further. He needs to tell him about the Shardblade.
Right. He has, but.
Yeah, it's not, it's deaf ears, I guess. Yeah. Or it's, I mean, supposedly Dalinar did an investigation. That's all that we're told, though.
Amaram has done a really fucking good job polishing his reputation. So.
Yeah, and maybe keeping Dalinar in his pocket, too.
Right.
Captain, you and your men are in a unique position. You spend your daily lives around the king. You don't see the face that is presented to the world. You see the man. It has ever been so for close bodyguards, so your loyalty needs to be extra firm and generous. Yes, the man you guard has flaws. Every man does. He is still your king, and I will have your respect. I can and do respect the throne, sir. Not the man sitting in it, perhaps, mm-hmm. he thinks.
Yeah.
I like this when Dalinar calls him son.
Yeah, it's nice.
Son, do you know why I put you into the position that I did? You said it was because you needed someone you could trust, not to be a spy for Sadeas. That's the rationale, but it's not the reason. I did it because it felt right.
Mm-hmm.
I trust my hunches, Dalinar says. My gut said that you were a man who could help change this kingdom. A man who could live through damnation itself in Sadeas's camp and still somehow inspire others was a man I wanted under my command. I gave you a position no Dark Eyes has ever held in this army. I let you into conferences with the king, and I listened when you spoke. Do not make me regret those decisions, soldier.
Mm-hmm.
You don't already? Kaladin asks. I've come close. I understand, though, if you truly believe what you told me about Amaram. Well, if I'd been in your place, I'd have been hard-pressed not to do the same thing you did. But Stormont, man, you're still a Dark Eyes. It shouldn't matter.
No, it should not matter.
Maybe it shouldn't, but it does. You want to change that? Well, you're not going to do it by screaming like a lunatic and challenging men like Amaram to duels. You'll do it by distinguishing yourself in the position I gave you. Be the kind of man that others admire, whether they be light-eyed or dark. Convince Elokar that a Dark Eyes can lead. That will change the world.
It's got a point. It sucks. Well, it's bitter. It's not really what Kaladin wants to hear right now because of the Roshon reveal. But he does have a point that, you know, Light Eyes already have, like, you know, a way of thinking about Dark Eyes that, you know, don't perpetuate the stereotype. I think that's what Dalinar's trying to say here.
Yeah. Well, I think it comes down to a fundamental way that you look at how change should come about.
Right.
Dalinar is suggesting, look, if you want to change things, work with the system that exists.
Right.
Get involved and make changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like advising people that don't like policy and politics.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, look, go to school, get a master's degree in political science.
Run for office,
or business.
Make change.
Run for office, make change. Go in the system, and if you're lucky, you might be able to make something happen.
Right.
But the other way to look at it is, well, history's taught us, well, there's another way to get change, and that's with revolution.
That's true, too.
Bold action. And so that's where Kaladin, sometimes I feel that storm within him is kind of like that. It's
we definitely know that he's heading in that direction right at the end of this chapter here.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
So to conclude this, Dalinar turns and walks away. Kaladin couldn't help thinking that the man's shoulders seemed more bowed than when he had entered. So earlier in the description, he was very, like his shoulders were very squared. He seems like a little slunk.
Yeah, it's taken a lot out of him to deal with
having
this
conversation. Yeah, like I like to think that Dalinar is thinking heavily
right
on what Kaladin is saying to him.
I think so too.
I don't know.
He feels probably embarrassment about this whole Roshon thing. He feels still embarrassed and shitty about the fact that Cal is even in jail, that he's talking
in
to
here.
Him in prison, right? So, yeah, I think so too.
After leaves, Kaladin sits back down. "Stay calm," he whispers. This is Kaladin. Mm-hmm. "Do as you're told, Kaladin. Stay in your cage." Syl says he's trying to help. Kaladin glances to the side. Well, where was she hiding? "You heard about Roshon." Yeah, and earlier they said earlier in this chapter about her hiding and not knowing where she goes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, dude. That theory about, you know, inside, like maybe she's, you know, a part of him kind of thing. I don't know. Like when she goes somewhere, it's like, well, she's like a part of you. "Where was she hiding? You heard about Roshon." Silence from Syl. And finally she says, "Yes." Her voice sounding small. "My family's poverty, the way the town ostracized us, Tien being forced into the army. These things were all Roshon's fault, and Elokar sent him to us." Syl didn't respond. He was thinking about Moash, and he thinks Moash really was right. This kingdom would be better off without Elokar. It was time someone stepped in and cut the ties, binding Dalinar's hands. For the good of the kingdom, for the good of Dalinar Kholin himself, the king had to die. Some people, like a festering finger or a leg shattered beyond repair, just needed to be removed.
Yeah, that last line is echoing what Graves
surgeon.
Said. Yeah.
It's the surgeon.
Yeah, but this is the line that Graves fed to him at that bar that night. And so, you know, it's a seed that was planted early on, and now it's starting to grow.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I really, what's so interesting about this series is the way to think thematically about the decisions made by the characters. Like, who is it? Dalinar the soldier? Sorry, Kaladin the soldier, Kaladin the slave, Kaladin
surgeon.
The wretch, Kaladin the surgeon. Mm-hmm. And right there, this assassination, this removal, comparing it to a festering finger, something you have to amputate.
Yeah. Crazy.
I love it. I couldn't love it anymore.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm just eating this up. But again, very nervous about our Kaladin hero here.
What's your highlight for this chapter?
Well, I think it has to be, it's not Adolin, is it? Oh, is it going to be somebody like Adolin?
That's pretty funny. That is pretty great. Just to say, yeah, so, that's probably
great.
Mine too. Mine is the whole combination of
the Shallan,
the insult to Shallan without actually knowing he's insulting Shallan. Like even when he's not trying to, he's insulting her. I think that's really fucking funny.
Yeah, it's really funny.
But I also do like this whole reveal of Roshon because, you know, recently in a last episode or the episode before, we talked about who was to blame. When the Helleran reveal happened, we talked about who was to blame for this whole thing. And we said, well, it all boils down to being Roshon. You know, Shallan's brother died because of Roshon. Cal's brother died because of Roshon. Cal got enslaved because of Roshon. It all boils back down to this. But then we find out that really the starting point is Elokar.
You know, I'm going to voice this.
Okay.
I don't know if I like Kaladin's search, always to blame something outside of himself.
Right. It's true.
I don't. It makes for great drama for a great story.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what I would hope for Kaladin, he needs to put it to rest.
He needs to own his shit.
He can't right the wrongs of the past. He needs to move on and deal with a world with with Rishon, with Amaram, mm-hmm. with Sadeus.
Yep.
And I don't know. I can't help but say it. Like he needs to, I don't know. He needs to keep growing.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you're right. So yeah, we're on to the info dump here. Yet again, the info dump is brought to us by our research guy, Buzzkill Joe. Thank you so much for doing all this work,
Buzzkill Joe.
We are going to keep mentioning your name because you're doing such good work for us. We really appreciate it. So let's take a look at what he's got here for us.
Sure.
It looks like we have a couple of new characters at the Devar family house, which we've already kind of talked about. Rin is this new house guard. He's like the captain of the guard. Levrin is a new one, too. Ten and Beale were names that were mentioned. These are the old house guards. We already talked about how Sudhi Valam, which is the High Prince's daughter, is also the like a half brother to this messenger that had come to the house with the heterochromatic eyes. Then there are new players like Luesh, which we kind of know about from the first book. We have a really cool thing here a Buzzkill kind of pointed out to me here on the notes is that Axehound blood is purple.
Is violet, yeah.
Yeah, violet. And so yeah, is Chasm Fiend blood, also violet. So nice little connection there. Really great. He also wanted us to talk about what a tenor is. They say you can be knocked down to tenor.
Yes,
I can live
as a
tenor.
You can be knocked down to tenor.
And it comes up actually in both chapters. And a tenor is someone of the 10th dawn. Tenor.
A tenor.
So like the lowest on
the
social
run.
Ladder. Yeah.
Yep.
So,
right.
So yeah, that's kind of gives us a little bit of a picture of how low it would be that Balot is willing to go just to get away from
to
his
go.
Family. But yeah, what else do we have here? I've got, one of the things I did want to, bring up again, actually, no, there's nothing. We've already talked about the Pain Spren that came back up and, the, cryptic that, sees, we know its pattern. So yeah.
And the
it.
Unknown Spren, the unknown one, the taut wires.
Yeah. That's the one thing that's not in here. So we will crowdsource the answer to that. If anybody knows I can't remember any description of taut wires, but, it will be interesting to find out if anybody has any answers for us. So. Yeah. But if you want to be involved in the community, you can go to patreon.com/heroesof. I am not going to read the entire list today. I want to give it a rest for a week. I want it to be just really the end of the episode here, just to be about you and me and saying thanks to the people that are listening, because we understand that, you know, there are people who want to be part of the community. And if you want to be part of the community, you can go to patreon.com/heroesof. But not everyone can afford to do so. And not everyone has the ability to do that. But we really do appreciate you listening week to week. We really appreciate the people who are on Reddit and Twitter and on Facebook and on Instagram who come out and reach out to us and tell us that you like the show. And there are people that are making they're sending us these images and you know, maybe some corrections and some fact checking. We love all that stuff. We love engagement from the listeners. So if you have something to say, you can send it to us at heroesofkathra@gmail.com. You can reach us at Twitter at heroesofone, on the StormPod on Instagram, or you can go and find us on Reddit. We have a StormPod subreddit too, which is getting more action. So if you want to reach out and kind of tell us we were wrong or explain to us what a taut wire spren is, then you can do so on those platforms. We really appreciate you. We really, really, really do. It is an honor for us to be able to go through this book series that Mr. Sanderson has written and to be able to be with you week to week. Jackman, we are getting up in this chapter, this part four. We are going to be doing three chapters next time. We are going to be doing 63, 64, and 65. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a little bit longer of a episode than it was this one. This one is a very short episode because of how small the chapters are. But yeah, so if you're reading along with us, make sure that you are reading 63, 64, and 65 next time. Anyways, thank you very much for listening, guys. We love you. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Akathra.